three men who all share an interest and a profession in the spiritual world, an imam, a pastor, a rabbi. So what to you was particularly striking or unique about this?
So there are a couple of angles. One that cannot be ignored is the political environment that we're in right now, the political theater that we're exposed to. With that as a backdrop, and a very important backdrop, then emerges an evangelical preacher. And I was curious to find out if he was actually an evangelical, because I know how to vet evangelicals, and if he actually liked this imam, or if this was a front for something, you know, some project. But it turned out these are friends. These three guys are friends. And then the other thing is that it may be difficult to appreciate, but I'm from Seattle, the left coast, where everybody's heathen, you know. And so anything that happens in the Midwest is, like, to me, quite conservative. If it just emerges out of the Midwest, it's conservative just by nature of its being. And I thought this story, actually, this friendship would be radical in Seattle.
You know, really?
Absolutely.
How so?
Because you do not find evangelical pastors befriending Muslim imams, particularly evangelical pastors with large churches, because that's how evangelicals measure influence, is mm-hmm. by how large the church is. Evangelicals are currently part of a political institution that have clout. And when Jim Powell decided to befriend a Muslim imam in Peoria, Illinois, he was able to get the attention of the CEO of Caterpillar, the mayor, et cetera, that the imam nor the rabbi could have afforded. And they all know that, right? They all know that. We've had this conversation. And so Jim lent his reputation at no small price to himself to this project and initiated it. So he had my respect from the beginning, because I knew what I knew the price he was going to pay and will pay for doing this.
In the story that you're highlighting in the documentary and in the book itself, are you going to be really more so teasing out the fact that here's this evangelical pastor who's doing this than here's these three guys who are friends?
No, the evangelical angle was what drew me in. The story will follow the nature of their relationship, which of course emerges out of a religious construct. The thing that that allows attention is that there's so much negative space going on behind this, one of which is that most bad ideas today emerge out of religious conflicts. Many thinking people view religion essentially as an equivalent word for dangerous. And this story, you know, provides the idea that, well, what if religion was good? What if religion could be good? Let's make religion good again, right? Let's make religion good
again.
Sounds
like it would be on a hat.
It's going to be on a hat. And so that's essentially what we're presenting, the notion that these guys come from institutions that they would like to say, you know, I'm not that kind of a Jew, I'm not that kind of a Muslim, I'm not that kind of a Christian.
Well, Jim, I understand that you have splintered your production schedule, not just in half, but I mean, it is, you've got 90 days to get this complete. What's the rush?
So 60 days. So the rush is, we've been at it now for, you know, 2 months. We came out in mid-June. We spent a week with I call them the Peoria Three, and interviewed about 15, 20 people from their congregations. I ended up, you know, liking these guys, believing in them. My crew believed in them. We came back. The political season continued, you know, intensifying the anti-Muslim rhetoric, the discriminatory comments, things that are really, really, really seriously un-American, you know. For people that are truly patriots, you know, that's that kind of behavior is just unforgivable that we would treat people that way. The imam's wife was stalked here in Peoria, run off the road by someone, probably a white evangelical, you know, sorry, you know, to have to say that. But the odds are, you know, statistically, that's a good chance. Somebody harassing her. You know, if that happened to my wife or a white person's wife or someone in privilege's wife, the police would be involved. That's just completely un-American that we're harassing people, calling people rag women because they wear a veil, that we're calling them ragheads. And so there's all that going on. And so then I turned around and said to the Peoria 3, I said, you know, this story, we can't wait 12 months. We have to do this in 12 weeks because we have to get the story turned around before the election. Not just because the election, like we're going to influence it, but because there's energy and interest right now. It's like there's a spotlight on this topic that's going to go away. When you see the film or read the book, they talk a lot about the otherization that we're doing to one another, you know, and so what we're creating is an antidote to that we call otherliness. Whether they're atheist, religious, we don't care. It's all about how are you going to survive in this world and not lose your soul, you know, and be a real person. So that's the work we're trying to do.
Mr. Henderson, I have to point out what you're saying is strikingly a far cry from what we've heard from evangelical Christians in the media quite frequently.
Really?
The term gets thrown around so much, especially in political reporting recently. I mean, Trump was at a conservative Christian event largely populated by evangelicals last week. Mm-hmm. What does the term even mean anymore?
Well, not a great deal. Well, I know this from firsthand my own history. The evangelical wing of Christianity has become thoroughly politicized. I mean, hats off to the Republican Party for winning that group, and this is what it looks like when you win. This is what it looks like. We end up with someone like Donald Trump, and you end up with these incredibly conflicted Christians who know he's probably the worst. He's the antithesis, character-wise, of what they would normally vote for, but he's going to deliver a political agenda which includes the Supreme Court. So primarily evangelicals are really voting for the Supreme Court. They're not voting for Donald Trump. In fact, I think secretly many of them hope either resigns or something else happens and Mike Pence takes over. And they may even feel like God's telling them that, you know, that those kind of things will happen.
Voting in terms of their pro-life agenda.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Because that is the defining issue in their minds. However, there's a large group, particularly younger people emerging in the evangelical world who do not have that straightened view. Now, they will generally take the same view, the pro-life view, but it's not straight, and they're more nuanced, and they're willing to negotiate. They're willing to talk, and they understand there's other issues at play, like war and poverty, the way we treat women and gay people. They understand all that. So you'll see a complete divide demographically on this in terms of who's voting. There'll be a big split on young evangelicals. They'll split between Trump and Hillary, and depends on what part of the country they're in.
You say that, you know, you want to come out before the November election, not necessarily to sway voters, but I look at that with a little bit of skepticism. Do you anticipate or do you hope that there will be an effect on evangelicals in this country who might see it or hear it?
I would like to reshape the imagination of people around evangelicals. The role that I play in this is to help produce something where it looks like we're not strident, we're not in charge, we're not demanding, we're part of something else, we're part of others. People that are trying to become better as human beings would definitely be benefited by hearing this story.
Jim Henderson, thank you so much for talking with us. I appreciate it.
Cass Arrington, it was a privilege.